ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It does feel good. It feels amazingly good. It feels so good. Day four. It's Hal Sparks, and I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller while she's away on vacation. We do have a spa update. In her allotted 5 days of actual vacation away from work, she has spent the hourly equivalent of 4.5 of those days either walking on a trail up into the mountains or biking on a bike with no wheels down the mountain, I think.
What is a bike with no wheels?
Spinning. And I think actually she goes bicycle.
Spinning bikes have wheels.
Well, they don't.
They just don't actually go anywhere.
Which is even sadder.
No.
I rest my case. Yes, it is.
I am a huge spin addict.
Spinning has nothing to do with the wheels on the vehicle. It's not even a vehicle. Spinning has to do with what your knees and your ankles are
correct.
Doing. In the right. The wheel is superfluous. There's only
you're
one.
You're pushing the wheel.
Yeah, but only as an indicator. It's not actually a wheel. It's just a circle.
That's
it's only
wheel
a wheel
bar.
If it's
they're
used for
circles.
Transportation. Look, I don't want to get into a big discussion about the wheel right away, but let me say for the record, and you're going to be on tangent police this episode.
I will be on
I'm going to be
police.
All over the place,
yes.
Because first of all, we have callers.
I
she's
am
waiting.
A superhero, and my name is Tangent Averter,
yes,
apparently.
And you're going to need to be, because today is going to be nuts. Because we've got Representative John Yarmouth from the Yarmouth from the great state of Kentucky. We've got David Bender calling in, and we've got Rick Overton joining us in studio for hour three.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah. But for the record, I would like to pick a fight right out of the gate and say that the person who invented the wheel, and I'm assuming it was, it might have been a tribal thing at the time, so long ago, no big deal whatsoever. The invention of the wheel, not a big deal. You know what is a big deal? The invention of the axle. Because anybody can roll something round down a hill. But once you decide to attach two of them together and turn it into a wagon of some sort, that's impressive.
I'm pro-wheel. I'm going to say the wheel in and of itself, important.
It was an important visual, not useful on its own. Here's a good idea. Try to come to work on a tire tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm just saying, for the record. Okay, Carl Frisch is on the phone with us.
Don't
and
you dare me. I'll try it.
Oh, yeah, no. I know you will. You locked your keys in your car yesterday.
I did lock my keys in the car yesterday.
In the trunk. We'll talk about that in a bit. But Carl Frisch is with us. Carl Frisch is here. And we actually have a theme song. Do we have it, Tony? You got to bear with us, Carl, because Tony has a lot of new buttons to push. There it is.
Carl.
Carl Frisch. Exciting. WholeFightStrategies.com.
Yes.
Not to be confused with our pushing Tony's button.
No, which we do
all. You know what? For the record, the wheel was invented by John McCain. I think everybody knows
That's
that.
That's true.
And second, if we want to know why liberals have trouble connecting with Heartland America,
uh-huh.
It's because we talk about riding bicycles to nowhere, which is basically what spin class is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think get out there and get the air in your lungs. I mean, not that I'm against being in a room full of other sweaty people.
You don't think the girl who just locked her keys in her trunk wouldn't get hit by a car?
It's
much safer for me to be on a bike in a room than it is for me to be on the street.
I'm not going to argue that point with you. I'm not going to argue that point. Carl Frisch, here it is. You are a media strategist. You are a Democratic strategist in some circles. You have messaged different products as far as verbality across the great divide of, see, I'm reaching really far for this, of politic in this country, great policy and making it accessible to the, and then you look at the autopsy report coming from the Republican Party and go, excuse me?
Wasn't it fun?
Oh.
I mean, talk about a good read.
I mean that
in the drag queeniest sense of the word, a good read.
Right.
Are you going to do the audiobook for it, Carl?
Yeah.
I would like to.
Snickering to a minimum.
I think Wilford Brimley would do a better job than me.
Right.
I mean, I love how they kind of touch around the edges of the issues that are actually far more pressing to their party.
Right.
You know, they talk about the need to reach out to different groups,
mm-hmm.
but they don't talk about the need to change their policies to attract the interest of those groups.
Yeah, it is as if they do not know the difference between policy and propaganda. That, I mean, maybe this is how they, you know, why they spend most of their time not voting against stuff they actually think should pass because of the propaganda value of not voting for it versus the policy of actually getting it done, right?
I think more people in D.C. pay attention to how someone voted on something than the voters actually do. Like, people don't go back and read your past vote.
I do.
Part of it is the overall feeling that somebody gets from a party. So one of the things that this document exposed that we've all seen in other polling going back years now is that people think the Republican Party is scary, out of touch, and doesn't support their values.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you know that, what are you going to do about it? And mm-hmm. you're seeing the sticky wicket that the Republicans are in. I use old-fangled terminology to appeal to Republicans. You see the sticky wicket that they're in the way that this report has been received by its base. If you look at Rush Limbaugh or Fox News, they just basically took a collective crap on top of this document.
Right.
And that's Rush Limbaugh. He does big crap.
He does. Yeah, absolutely.
He's not doing Oxy, which constipates you.
Which he no longer apparently does.
Oh.
Because it nearly made him deaf. Which is why he doesn't listen to you when you tell him facts.
Really?
He has used that as an excuse.
Oh.
I'm just kidding.
Right.
It's stunning that as fast as they come out, Carl Frisch, please explain this to me. Do the phones work between the RNC and the electioneering apparatus of the RNC and the actual people in Congress? Or because of gerrymandering, they just not care anymore? Or do they have to not care?
Let's take our liberal hats off for a second. Just look at this as, like, say, political scientists without a degree. Imagine that your political party was a certain demographic that was dying off, but still enormously influential and hardwired to support a certain set of issues that were largely unpopular with the American people.
Right.
Now, you have a few choices if that's the case. There's obviously other people that you can attract to your party, but you've got to switch your position on issues to attract those people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you first do that, you're going to be in a world of pain because the people that give you money, the people that show up at your rallies, the people that volunteer for your causes are going to be offended and not like the fact that you've changed on the issues that they hold dear to their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got the Republican Party right now confronted with a big problem. So they're slowly coming out in favor of immigration reform again. Person by person is more, you know, and I'm doing my job. I'm trying to recruit more gay children of senators.
right.
But as Republicans encounter the idea that marriage equality isn't just about gay people, it's about winning independents and women when it comes to votes, because those people look at anybody who doesn't support marriage equality and LGBT rights as crazy.
Right.
As they start to evolve on these issues, they risk killing off a huge chunk of their population as far as the vote goes for no immediate return or reward. So, yeah, if the Republican Party came out entirely pro-gay tomorrow and entirely in favor of immigration reform tomorrow and entirely in favor of some kind of an urban policy that doesn't stigmatize people of color, they would be on the right path to securing a future for themselves. But they would hurt dramatically in the short term. They would lose a huge chunk of the very people that are putting them in office currently. So they are in the position of choosing whether they want to hurt now or if they want to hurt even worse later. And that's not a position I would ever want anybody, if it was my party, I would not want to be in that position.
Well, but it was a position they put themselves in. It's arguably the same position that, like, Wall Street tycoons, the diamonds of the world, make short-term decisions for maximizing profit in the short term.
Right, it's endemic of their mentality.
Right.
It's endemic of their mentality and the way that they view things.
But it will doom the company in the long term.
And that's when you see, like, how they're trying to minimize the damage that's, in the short term.
Right.
What do they do? Okay, if you know these demographics are changing, you try and change the rules by which we play the game. So you start doing voter ID laws. You start screwing with the way that we register voters. Look at the Supreme Court picking up that case in Arizona and having those oral arguments this week.
Mm-hmm.
You start playing with the rules of the game. Look at the states that have flirted with the idea of changing the way electoral votes are handed out. And those are really just, it's like having a, you know, 3-inch gash on your thigh from falling off your spin bike in class, Jackie. And instead of getting sutures, putting one of those, like, shaving Band-Aids on.
Right.
It may look like it's doing the job, but it's only going to be a matter of minutes before the blood is, you know, seeping out of,
again,
the, of
right.
the hole again.
Right.
So this is – and by the way, if you want to know how to win this fight, mm-hmm. we have to act like Republicans do when Democrats are weak. We don't look at them and pity them. We don't look at them and think, oh, we've won. Let's get to governing.
Right.
What we do is we go in for the kill.
Right.
Because in a knife fight between a liberal and a Democrat, or a liberal and a conservative will stab you,
right.
and then they'll step on the wound and break your neck and then put you in the trunk next to the other bodies.
Right.
And then deny you health care to fix the wound.
A liberal will go, you dropped your knife, you here, use mine.
Right. A liberal will stab you on accident, right. Help you up, put you in an ambulance, and put you on their insurance.
Right. Yeah. On that note, we will let you go. Carl Frisch, carlfrisch.com, of course. Some fantastic stuff, not the least of which, by the way, I want to bring attention to on your site, on carlfrisch.com, you have an article about the California YMCA and support for that, and people can donate via your
youth and government. It changed my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Got me into politics.
Exactly. So I want to draw people's attention not only to Carl Frisch's site, which is great in and of itself, and of course his appearances on Viewpoint and shows like this one, but also if you got a moment and that's and you lean in that way at all, you know, go by there, click on the link, and donate.
And he tends to be super funny.
He is very funny.
I try to be.
Yeah. And if he,
there is no try, Carl. There just is.
Only do. Thank you, Yoda, Jackie. thank you, Carl Frisch, for leaving us on a Yoda laugh. Okay.
Have a good one.
Cheers. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll be back right after this. And we're going to talk about the president's trip to Israel, his first one of his presidency, early in his second term. And the difficult issues of the Middle East peace process, dealing with Israeli-Palestinians and territorial disputes. And after we discuss it, and all the caveats that you have to say before you start discussing it.
Are you going to plant a tree?
No. I'm going to have to pick a religion to join afterwards to defend myself. And so it'll either be Scientology or the Freemasons. These are my only – I think these are the two choices.
It.
Yeah. I'm going to have to be a Freemason or a Scientologist as a cover point. And I'll let the callers decide. 1-800-STEPH-12. You guys pick which one I should join just for my own good. We'll be back right after this. Isn't that a mystery? It's great. I told you you're going to be on Tangent Police. We'll be back.
And now, here's something we hope you'll really like.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. That was an amazing Yoda laugh from Carl Frisch. I was impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted,
Carl's great.
It's also a Grover laugh.
Yeah. A slight variation.
Yes.
Same guy in both, isn't it?
Huh?
Is the same guy?
Yeah, it's Frank Oz.
It's Frank Oz. That's
also. And there's a thin line between Yoda and Super Grover, and it's really mostly grammar.
Ah, okay.
The big difference is the inversion of verb-subject. You know how it's laid out, you know.
Right.
But basically,
same there's thing. A monster at the end of this book.
There's a thin line between
there's a monster in that cave. Be afraid.
You know, remember, we've got a lot to cover today, certainly, not the least of which is, of course, the president is in, was caught on a hot mic in Israel talking to Bibi Netanyahu.
On the tarmac, as he arrived.
I got to say, I always find it a bit weird when they give foreign leaders' nicknames, or that they're known by nicknames, you know.
You think it's a lack of authority?
It's peculiar.
Okay.
I'll tell you what it is. It seems overly friendly beyond the level of policy, and I don't mind it on your own personal life. If that's your nickname for them, that's fine. But when you're in public, call each other by your real names, please. and your titles and
Tony
whatnot.
Blair Bear never caught
yeah,
on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. T-Bone, listen, you know, T-Blair, listen, buddy. Like, it's just, that's peculiar yeah. to me. It's like you wouldn't go, of course, Vlad and I, when you're talking to Vladimir Putin, you know what I mean?
No.
So, Bibi Netanyahu and the president are
And
meeting.
That's not actually a very manly nickname either. Like, Bibi's kind
no,
of a...
No, Bibi is terrible.
It's like your grandma.
It's a tiny little sphere.
Gammy BB.
Yeah, yeah my Gammy BB. Yeah, it's BB is a substitute word when you can't pronounce things yet because yeah. your tongue and lips don't work in concert. But there was an open mic, track one.
Check it!
That's when they're yelling to start the music. Hey, guys! And you hear President Obama lean over and go, it's good to get away from Congress. You know how bad things are when in your relationship with Congress that you go to Israel to talk about the Middle East peace process? It's like this joke. I think the last person I heard tell it was Gilbert Gottfried, was that, you know, there's this genie comes out of a bottle and the genie says, I'll grant you one wish no matter what it is. Now, this is the wish. You can, and this guy goes, well, I've been married to my wife for 42 years, and she's never performed oral sex. She's never done that on me. Would you please get her to do that? Or no, he goes, how about this? The Middle East. I screwed up the whole joke. The Middle East. The Palestinians and the Jews have been fighting forever. Would you please, you know, do something about it? And he goes, I'm with all my powers, I can't do anything about it. And he goes, well, okay, what's your second wish? And he goes, well, how about... my wife has never performed oral sex on me. And he goes, can I get a look at that Israeli-Palestinian thing again? It's that kind of – so if you're avoiding Congress to get – you know, like, oh, things are so contentious in Congress. I'm going to go to Israel, the Israel-Palestine border.
Take a breather.
Palestinian border, yeah. I'm going to go to the Gaza Strip to get away from it all.
A little rocket fire.
Yeah, it's a bit screwy. Now – the unnecessary caveat that you have to put forward, much like when you're talking about the weakness of the modern Republican Party, that you have to go, not all Republicans, let's all, like, a not all Republicans are like, not all conservatives yeah. are, you know, you always have to start off the conversation because we're liberals and progressives and we don't want to automatically
stereotype an entire.
Yeah, but statistically speaking, the modern Republican Party, which is not the old Republican Party, is behaving in a specific way and legislating that behavior and
I would say the vocal majority is
absolutely.
Behaving that way.
And therefore, if silence is acceptance, everybody around them is either out of fear or out of agreement, but not wanting to put their cheese in the wind. I don't know what the actual terminology would be. No, it's just that I'm trying to use radio and TV friendly language sometimes, and I catch myself early in the show. By the second hour, I've got it down. But in the I'll swear right up to showtime, and then I'll go, what words can I substitute? So
a comedian once said, "There's white out in your head."
This is the point I'm trying to make, and this is something worth. Talking about with our callers, and of course in the next hour we'll have David Bender's also calling in along with John Yarmuth from Kentucky and like I said Rick Overton in the third hour. But from our callers I'd like to hear, there's this thing about somehow that if you criticize the actions of the Israeli government, you are somehow either anti-Semitic or anti-Israel. And to me, that's the exact same as saying if you criticize the Bush administration, you are un-American. I think that, especially in the realm of political discourse, paints everybody into a corner where nobody can make any progress.
There is a complicated issue there. I mean, I get myself into trouble by going there. But
that's what I mean. It's a complex conversation.
I was raised Jewish, mm-hmm. and there are conversations that happen at home with members of my family and extended friends mm-hmm. and family and that sort of thing about how I feel about our relationship with Israel and how they feel. And there's sort of an undying devotion on behalf of some people within my circle when
sure.
it comes to Israel.
About the land itself.
When we come back,
we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss that. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. That is so There's just something warm and inviting about that riff. See what I mean? There's a warmth to a distorted guitar that people miss. You use words like buzzsaw and those kind of things for a type of distortion. Feel that?
I like it.
It's not so bad. See, I'm just saying.
It's just a really good overdrive, I think, is what he did. It's not like that real distortion, but just, like a good overdrive pedal.
Yeah, an overdrive will pull you in. It's good, yeah.
I'm learning so much from you two.
See, this is, I don't want people to fear the metal.
I feel cooler just from sitting in this room and listening to this music.
You are.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm Hal Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Of course, we're on Current TV right now. If you want to watch us there, you can go to current.com and find a station on your cable system, satellite system, however you view television. You can also listen to us on umpteen different websites across the country for progressive stations.
Yeah, StephanieMiller.com has a list of the stations that were carried on, and then they stream those online.
Absolutely.
As well.
My favorite one, of course, being Chicago's ProgressiveTalk.com.
Because that's also your station.
Yeah, I'm on Saturdays on there, exactly. And again, this Sunday I'll be doing a stageit.com show, stageit.com/Hal Sparks. You can buy a ticket to the show and watch it. And I'm also introducing a few of my favorite comedians, including my dear friend Chris Bono, who opens for me regularly. And speaking of favorite comedians, Rick Overton will be joining us in the third hour today. We have a we're starting to get a lot of calls about the Israeli-Palestinian issue. And this is always going to be a contentious conversation. And I think it's one of the reasons why this has dragged on as long as it has. And one, I think this is actually the fear of appearing anti-Semitic actually limits the conversation on the actions of the Israeli government and the rights of the Palestinian people, and that slows down the peace process. I think it is instrumental to how long the peace process has taken.
I think that's a fair assessment.
Because look at the English and the Irish. It is a similar territorial argument. It was equally as violent. You had bombs being blown up in central London. You had, the IRA, an active as much as, as any force on the Palestinian side against, Israel is. The IRA was against England for the same occupied reasons. The difference was, when you talked about either side, there was never the pretense that somehow you could seem anti-Irish or anti-English, except based on policy and actions in the past. The English had done certain things that people were very much against, but it wasn't seen as a racial issue. It was not seen as a belief system issue. It wasn't, and internally, it was an old-fashioned C of E versus, Protestant-Catholic divide.
Yeah, it's all religious.
Right.
I mean, all stems back.
That's what I mean.
By the way, we should say, through the course of the show today, we would like people to suggest what religion you should choose.
Yeah, exactly. Because this conversation, no matter how you try to be as balanced about it as possible, no matter how fair you try to be, you will be painted into a corner. So I'm going to have to retreat back to a religion with some level of power to protect myself.
Right.
And since I can't convert to Judaism, although I've passed the physical test, I suppose. because I don't believe the Abrahamic traditions in their essence. I just can't do that.
Do you like a good latke?
Huh?
Do you like a good latke?
No.
We don't need you.
No, I used to go to Greenblatt's for the matzo ball soup, though, which was fantastic. Ooh. But I don't think that qualifies as a basis of a religion.
That's about as Jewish as I am these days.
Right,
but.
Sure. I would go that that's cultural,
yes,
not religious. And I think that's as movable as anything else. There are tons of New Yorkers who aren't Jewish who
it's a joke. I know.
I think it's important. This is see how you get painted as a ghost. So I'm either going to have to become a Scientologist or I'm going to have to join the Freemasons.
Okay. I don't know much about the Freemasons.
All
so
I know is I drive
to...
by a temple on La Cienega all the time, and there's they have a marquee like an old movie theater, and it says, "Want to be a Freemason? Ask one." And that's it's like, well, that seems easy.
Do you have to take a personality
assessment? I thought I'd have to buy a robe and get some candles.
Do you have to take a personality assessment the way
you
do for Scientology?
You do not have to get your head hooked up to a Simon.
Okay.
Oh, you failed. Sorry, you don't have a personality. So this is a difficult conversation. Tony, why don't you give us Andrea Mitchell's assessment of the relationship between the president and Israel right now? This is the bar we're operating with.
None of the independent critics would say that the White House has not bungled this relationship, but a lot of people put blame on the Israeli side as well. It's gotten off on the wrong foot, and they're trying to fix it. But it is one of the worst relationships I can remember, and I've covered every president going all the way back to Ronald Reagan. These leaders do not get along. They are not simpatico. There's certainly a perception, probably a correct one, that Netanyahu was in Mitt Romney's camp.
Assumptions, independent, some people.
Right, and
there's a specific group
there's
for
news. Let's be real clear as a full disclosure that never gets done. Andrew Mitchell is married to Alan Greenspan, the former head of the Fed. Okay, and Alan Greenspan was an acolyte of Ayn Rand. If you look at the age difference, Andrew Mitchell was a trophy wife for Alan Greenspan at the time. And I mean, I'm glad they stuck together. But that initially, you can tell she was his like hot young, you know, like politician wife kind of situation. Well, that being said, it never is stated.
Right.
It's never stated that Andrea Mitchell, like, it's so crazy. Every time she talks about anything dealing with monetary issues, it should be tattooed on her forehead.
Yeah.
Instead of running across the ticker across the bottom, it should be on her head. So you know who you're talking to. It's like when Clarence Thomas's wife comes on and talks about religious freedom and the right to not have health care. You should go,
by the way.
That being said, it's interesting to me that she says that what's botched about this relationship is that they're not simpatico, that they're not that there's not a buddy-buddy system to this, where you would never say that about any of our other allies, period. It's really fascinating to me that there's this assumption that we have to, and it may be from some group that we, you know, if we don't have this no daylight relationship with Israel, that somehow other leaders in the Middle East will get some idea that they could, oh, it's time to move. We can now bomb Israel because they're not nodding in succession together like Siamese twins.
Yeah, I don't
which
think our
absurd.
Policy has shifted
not
at
all.
There hasn't
right.
been any change in our
none
support.
None whatsoever. And that's,
and the president has continued to reiterate that.
Right. So let's take some of these calls. We're gonna and we'll do this through the it's a difficult one to talk about. Let's go to Tim in Columbus, Ohio. Hi, Tim.
Hey, listen, Jackie will appreciate this. I'm a member of a Reform congregation. I'm Jewish, and one of the big things is that not even in the Jewish community can you bring up the question of whether something Israel's doing is not quite right.
Totally true. Mm-hmm.
You just can't do it. And so there is no open discussion at all within that community. Mm-hmm. So you can't expect there to be any discussion in the wider U.S. community, because we're all expected to act as if we support everything Israel does de facto,
right,
because it is a Jewish state. So therefore it has the interest of all Jews at heart. And that is no way true at all.
Right.
But that is the pressure.
That's and, like saying that no matter what, the president of the United States always takes into account how all Americans feel. It's absurd. And I think it's interesting that we live in a country that prizes religious freedom, and that we are supposed to have no daylight between what is essentially a religious state. That's a really peculiar thing. Whereas we use that as a point of contention,
mm-hmm,
between now, Iran, for example, or against Saddam Hussein and how Coptic Christians were treated and the like of this unified, because it's a secular, or it's a Muslim government leading a Muslim nation, that somehow there's no daylight between the people and the leadership there.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of daylight between Israelis and the policies of Netanyahu, and even between Netanyahu and Shimon Peres. You know, there's distinctions. Shimon Peres is like, he basically said yesterday there needs to be a two-state solution, period. That's not...
There's also a difference between religion, culture, and geopolitical concern.
There's a lot of noise on the line. So thanks so much, Tim,
totally
for bringing
right.
that up. Yes.
Yeah.
And before we take a break, let's take one more caller. Let's go to Annette in Carmel, California. Carmel. Annette?
Hi. Hi, good morning to you.
Good morning.
I have just like three things to say.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I want to tell you to relax because Gandhi says God has no religion.
Well,
so don't worry about it.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's like saying beef has no restaurant.
God has no religion.
Right.
Second thing about worrying about anti-Semitism, it has nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with anti-Zionism, which is a very destructive philosophy that is destroying our country and Israel and Palestine.
Well, especially when it comes from, evangelical Christians in this country who view Zionism as an act for actually wiping out Jews who don't believe in Christ in the end times. I mean, that the Michelle Bachmans of the world and the Sarah Palins of the world, when they're having their heads touched by their weirdo ministers that come in, I mean, they're at the far arc of the Zionist evangelical Christian movement, which is get them all back to Israel, so that Jesus can appear on Armageddon, so that the ones that don't believe can have their throat slit as a sign that the end times are coming and the non-believers will be wiped out, the killers of Christ. I mean, they really do.
They believe that they're crazy.
Yeah, yeah they are.
Listen, I'm glad you're bringing it up today because all mainstream media doesn't talk about this in the truth. If you lived in Europe, as I have, if you lived in Asia, as I have, if you've lived around the world, the picture of what's going on in Israel and Palestine is nothing like it's portrayed here. Mm-hmm. It is so one-sided here, and it is disgraceful. Mm-hmm. And I'm disgusted with mainstream media. And finally, this is what I have to say. I'm disgusted that my tax money, $8 million a day, goes to Israel so that they can bomb and they can torture the people of Gaza and they commit genocide every day. Mm-hmm. And I cannot stand it when my president kowtows and acts like they're our best friend. I would never have a best friend that it was so cruel. Israel is a cruel nation, run by cruel people like Bibi Netanyahu.
I appreciate the call. I would go so far, though, as to say that whatever the cruelty of the leaders is not always, nor will it ever be, reflective of the entire populace or the populace of a country, even in many cases, the majority. There are so many peace marches of Israelis saying this has got to stop, who have for a long time believed in a two-state solution, have believed in the interaction of the Palestinians and the Israelis on a regular basis, that this is not, you know, and many people, by the way, who believe that this fight is actually over a waterway more than it's over a religious belief, because this is an area of the world where the water that runs through there, which side gets the resource, is part of the fight.
Really?
And right now the water falls on the Gaza-Palestinian side of it thing, and so the settlement encroachment is a way of reclaiming that source for the area, because it's an area of the world where water is of a, high, you know, not anywhere in the world it isn't. But let's take a break and let's come back. We have a bunch of calls about this in particular, and a couple of people who think, that I should become a Scientologist or perhaps a Freemason.
Let's do that.
Because I will need a group to protect me from the idea that I somehow am going against a
protected
group or
something. I got to do some Freemason Googling, but let's come back and I'll weigh in too.
And by the way, we'll talk about that afterwards. I have my own feelings about the matter, and I'll let you guys know over the
course
of the
show. Do I have to become whatever you aren't?
Yes, so we can argue. Because the important thing is that we have a religious line dividing us above all. No matter how much we love or agree with each other, no matter how much we may look similar, we must have a religious line between us arbitrarily dividing us because of stuff that happened 2,000 years ago. Okay, we'll be back right after this.
What in the name of holy hell is going on here?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. And by away, of course, I mean that Steph's at a spa. Chris is, on a cut, so he's not eating carbs and working out every day. And then and Jim is face down drinking tiny little airplane bottles of scotch and watching reruns of cartoons he did voices on, going, I could have been a contender.
It always blows me away because I play way too many video games. But I always I hear a character and it's like, that's Jim.
Right. Oh, totally. It's a great thing. I mean,
does it ruin it for you or does it make it better? Like, does it take you out of character?
You feel weird. A little bit.
You certainly feel weird shooting him.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, it's Jim. Oh, he's the boss. I got to knock him down.
I will destroy you. Oh, knock it off, Jim. I know what the... Besides, all I have to do is run around you in a circle and shoot at your midsection because it's what the game is telling me to do.
Distract him with hookers.
Yeah, right. Exactly. What you do is, anytime Jim is the voice of the big boss in a video game, what you do is you have your character bring in a laptop with some bikini pictures on it and throw it down in front of him, and he'll get totally distracted.
The conspiracy theory weapon.
And some sort of cheese and broccoli microwavable dinner. And you throw those in front of him, and he gets so distracted you can take him out. That's the system. So, okay, so we're talking about the president's trip to Israel.
Yes.
And I want to play this clip of Chuck Todd. Now, the Weekly Standard and all these people have freaked out that Obama jumped down the throat of a reporter. I love how they're just, a reporter got, you know, hammered by Obama for asking too many questions. And this is, tell me from the tone if you think that this is Obama telling a reporter to stop asking so many questions and shutting him down.
What do you believe went wrong? Did you push Israel too hard? What do you wish you would have done differently? And Mr. Prime Minister, I want to help out my colleague over here on the follow-up that he had, which had to do with, do you accept the president's understanding that Iran is a year away when it comes to nuclear weapons? And then another question I had for you.
Do you guys do this in the Israeli press? You say you get one question and then you add
well,
like
I'm
five.
Helping him. I'm helping him with his
you see how the young lady from Channel 1, she had one question. She's very well behaved, Chuck.
Well, I've got one for you.
These are Talmudic questions.
Apparently,
they have.
I thought I had four questions.
Reiterations,
Passover, yeah. Passover starts in a couple days. I get four questions, right?
This is not a kosher question, but don't hog it.
So this was reported as the two of them shutting down a reporter asking too many tough questions. Here's my problem with Chuck Todd. Let's just clear the air on this. Chuck Todd is much like David Gregory in that they have this, because they're involved with MSNBC, there is a perception that they are somehow progressive or liberal or that they have some sort of bent, which is exactly the opposite. I find them more often running interference for the Republican side of things than creating false balance, which is a CNN problem. And Chuck Todd especially. Never been a fan of Obama, never been a fan of Hillary Clinton, never been, and has at certain points intentionally, it's, you know, the idea is not real reporting, but to throw tacks under the tires. But that has nothing to do with this. This is Chuck Todd eating other reporters' time.
Right.
Which is, who's to say that they wouldn't have asked those questions? Everybody there had their own singular question. This is Chuck Todd thinking nobody here is going to – I'm getting screen time. I'm going to ask these questions so that they're answering me so I get the tape.
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, Chuck and I go way, 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 way back. We worked together a long time ago, so it's very hard for me to have any
objective commentary on
Chuck. No, I just have a very warm spot in my heart for Chuck and the work that we did together a long, long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that aside, I think what happens is there's a limited amount of time in these press opportunities.
Right.
And it's a fair thing to say – pick a question, because there are a lot of people sitting in that room. And I don't know that it's a matter of trying to hog time so much as, like, I just want to get everything out because it's running around in my head and I just want to blurt it out and see how much I can get out. And it is, in some regards, disrespectful to the rest of the reporters in the room.
Right. He's not in the press room at the White House. This
right.
is a different circumstance. This
right.
is two world leaders meeting about a specific issue, and there are a lot of press there, worldwide press, and
right.
Israeli press, and American press there, who've all got a question. And most of the topics that he covered, everybody else is going to cover, too.
Right.
And yes, the other guy didn't get a follow-up, but somebody else is going to ask that question as a follow-up. Anyways, it's about respect for the other reporters
right. but
there.
But reading into it is the president somehow shutting down
that's
having
what I
to
mean.
Answer
that's how
a question
that's
is
how
ridiculous.
It's coming. That's, and,
it's
it, and it's because they don't want questions asked about the Israeli-American, you know, is there daylight, is there not? Oh, for God. Whatever.
Go back to that rebranding your party thing.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So we've only got a minute left. And coming up after the break, John Yarmuth, representative from my original home state of Kentucky, will be joining us. And perhaps we will even ask him about his feelings about Ashley Judd running for Senate seat. But also about the shaky ground that Mitch McConnell finds himself on and whether stuff will actually get through the Congress, you know, there's stuff going on while the president is out of town. It's not.
No.
Yes. And none of it's really functional that much, but it is happening.
We'll talk to him when we come back.
Yeah, we'll do some news at the top of the hour. And then, of course, John Yarmuth, and then followed immediately by David Bender, which we will be dealing with the Israel issue. So if you're on the line, hang on, because we're actually going to get to your calls then, too.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It feels so good. Day four, Hal Sparks filling in for Stephanie Miller, and Jackie Schechner in the news sidecar,
yes,
keeping us honest. Tony. Not having to fight for audio today the way it is because the lovely and talented Rebecca Taylor numbered them to make it much easier for him today. Yesterday we had so much audio because we were dealing with all the lead-up Iraq lies. Here's what you may not know about me. I went to high school in Chicago. I started doing stand-up there when I was 15. But until that point in my life, I lived in Kentucky, and my family still does. My parents still live in Kentucky, as does our next guest, Representative John Yarmuth of the wonderful state of Kentucky. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Hal. Nice to talk with you.
You too. Kentucky has a complicated place in my heart. I'm sure as a representative of there, it does for you as well. The bifrenia of, you know, of how the state actually operates in a lot of ways on a personal level and on a social level, mm-hmm, and the people themselves, and then the representation being is, you know, being Rand Paul and yourself and Mitch McConnell and possibly Ashley Judd replacing. It's an odd place to be right now. It's a hotbed politically. What do you see as the trend there these days?
Well, you know, I think that what we're seeing in Kentucky is a lot of the disconnect that we see across the country is,
yeah,
that when you ask people how they feel about a particular issue, like whether they want to reduce, I can talk about Obamacare in a minute, but if you want to reduce,
yeah,
Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, they say, do you want to fund education? They say, you know, they'll say, we don't want to cut the entitlement programs. We do want education paid for and so forth and so on. And then they vote for the people who want to do exactly the opposite.
Well, and not only vote the opposite, but in the case of Rand Paul, eliminate the Department of Education. I mean, it's not even
exactly
a soft line. It's very peculiar in that regard. You know,
it is.
Yeah.
And I've said this because I've become kind of the avatar for Ashley Judd, even though I don't think that's accidental. It's not that I necessarily thought that position or that she wanted me to. But what I keep saying is that people in Kentucky tend to vote for people they feel comfortable with,
right,
and not necessarily with people they agree with. And that's why I think Ashley has such a great chance of beating Mitch McConnell, because people are tired of Mitch.
Right.
They don't really have any enthusiasm for him. And they will get to feel very comfortable with Ashley Judd.
That's true. And in all fairness, though, Mitch McConnell is not comfortable with Mitch McConnell. So you know, you do have that. You know, he never seems comfortable with himself. So here we have so many things that, you know, when Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House, there was obviously famously so many stalled bills that were worthwhile that were not getting through. Now there's the exact opposite. There's a stampede of Republican bills that are never going to make it in the Senate that are getting through. It's meet the new boss, same as the old boss, different agenda, same action.
That's right. My friend Joe Crowley from New York said that it's the same baby, different diaper, but eventually you're going to have to change it.
Right. nice analogy.
They seem to believe that there is no chance for, you know, getting their agenda enacted. Therefore, they're just going to put the most extreme agenda possible forward and not even worrying about doing something in what could be a bipartisan manner to try and work toward some rational approach to a problem. It's just send the reddest meat possible to the base, and we understand that that's the way it's going to be. Nothing's going to happen. But of course, that's what they want. They
right.
don't want the government to do anything.
Right. Well, that it's interesting to me. We know that I think the struggle in the Republican Party right now is one between policy and propaganda, and they have come down soundly on the side of propaganda, since it seems that even Paul Ryan saying with his budget, it's a statement more than it is an actual budget. It is a it's like, you know, it's his vision board, you know, versus his actual policy, because it counts on repealing Obamacare, but keeps right. the savings from it.
And the tax revenues from it.
Right, and that's who you're dealing with. How do you approach something like that? And again, you have constituents who are, you say Obamacare, and they're against it. You say everything that's in it, and they're for it.
Well, I'll make it even more compelling than that. During the last campaign, when we were polling, we asked people whether they supported or opposed the Affordable Care Act, and 55% said they supported it. When you asked them if they supported or opposed Obamacare, 55% opposed it. So
they're...
Well, that's why I don't like the term. Representative, it's one thing, it's Jackie Schechner. It's Jackie. One thing that really bugs me is that I know the president and Democrats have been have been willing to embrace the term, but I do think it comes from a negative place. And I do think it carries a negative connotation, and I don't think repeating it makes it sound better.
I'd rather
we just say Affordable Care Act or health care reform and make that stick.
Absolutely, and I think that those poll numbers bear it out. I haven't talked to any of my colleagues to see if they did a similar thing, but clearly in Kentucky, there is a segment of the population that will not support anything that has Barack Obama's name attached to it.
Right. And I know those people. I grew up around those people.
Yep.
Many people may or may not know I'm originally from Peekskill, Mill, Kentucky. At the time, one road, 46 people. We had Peekskill Elementary School, we had the general store, and we had a little white Christian church in every sense of the word, and a cemetery, and a bridge that you could only have one car on at a time. And that's, I mean, there are big sections of Kentucky that are like that. That if you go to these people individually and you go, is it right that a black person, for example, would be denied housing? If they could afford to buy a house, would you believe that they should be denied the ability to? They would say, absolutely not. And yet at the same time, they will vote repeatedly for people who actually instigate those kind of policies. Is it an education thing? Is it a... is the propaganda versus policy tack the Republicans are taking a valuable one on one front, in that your messaging is more important than the actuality?
I think it's exactly right, Hal. One of the things that's become very clear to me is the things we're dealing with in Washington now are really, really complicated. There's nothing more complicated than health care. Immigration policy is really complicated. Education, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And, the media basically treats everything in 10-second sound bites. So it's easy to say during the healthcare debate, in 10 seconds, government takeover,
right.
Socialized medicine, death panels, all of those kind of throwaway lines that really don't mean anything, but that's all the many people hear.
Right.
And
to undo that,
most people aren't going to take the time to spend 2 hours listening to an extensive discussion if one were available about the Affordable Care Act and what it did and how it would benefit their lives. And that's kind of the problem. How do we have thoughtful discussions about really complicated issues in today's environment? And it's almost impossible.
Especially when...
Except on this program.
Would you agree, though, that there is some responsibility that members of Congress have to educate themselves and figure out the best ways to speak about this? Because, at one point I went to go speak with members of Congress about how to talk about the public option on the floor. We were knee-deep in the fight, and they had no clue.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Right. I spent basically 14 months doing nothing but talking about healthcare reform. And when I would walk into a room back in my district with 50 people who were ready to strangle me, and
right.
I would spend a half hour, 45 minutes running through the provisions, saying, here's where we are, here's why we can't afford to do nothing, here are the options available to us,
right.
here's why we chose this. and then I would answer their questions. And after that period of time, they would walk out and say, hey, this sounds great.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
but,
it. It's,
but again, it totally was an education process, and we didn't do, as a party, we didn't do a very good job of that. Individual people did better than others, for
right.
sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, and by the way, we only have a couple of seconds left with you or whatever. And first of all, I want to thank you for being the congressman from the great state of Kentucky, because my mom is so happy that I get to talk to our congressman on a fairly regular basis. But also, there's one other issue, and I just want to personally thank you. And I want people to go to you can go to yarmuth.house.gov, Yarmuth. Is that you're talking about introducing or have introduced a bill to study the health consequences of mountaintop removal coal mining.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And in Kentucky, Virginia, that whole area, and it attaches in such a way to our energy policy that we have right now, especially when it comes to coal, an energy source that gives with one hand and takes with two. And you can only live so long that way. And being downriver from that kind of stuff and going, yes, we get cheap energy here, but our health care costs are twice that over here. You could it becomes almost zero sum or a sum negative over time. So
absolutely, it's a tragedy in Eastern Kentucky. And I talked to a teacher down there who said when her kids students draw their environment, they draw their creeks and streams in orange because that's what they see.
Right.
I mean, that's how bad it is, and it's just a horrendous practice. Even Greg Stumbo, the Speaker of the House in Kentucky, who comes from that area, recently said mountaintop removal is a dinosaur and needs to end. So we're making great strides in putting an end to this practice. Unfortunately, million-year-old forests have been destroyed in the meantime.
Well, and not to mention the hills of Kentucky. I mean, you have this entire region of the country that's known for its landscape, and a beautiful one at that, and systematically over time in the name of cheap energy, they're just being ground down to nubs. It's one thing to lose all your trees, but once you start carving down your mountains, there's no growing back.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to say, and obviously we're up against a break, so I wanted to thank you for being strong on that and introducing a bill on that, because it's such an important issue.
I hope we have a United States Senator Ashley Judd who will continue that fight, because she's passionate about the subject as well.
Absolutely. It's amazing how somebody wouldn't be passionate about not poisoning our kids just so we can keep our lights on a 5 cents a year cheaper.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Representative John Yarmuth of the great state of Kentucky.
All right, Hal. Great to be with you.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in with Jackie Schechner.
David Bender coming up.
And David Bender will be up after the break. We're going to be talking more about Israel, and we're going to take some of your calls, because I know David loves to talk to the callers as well, about the issue of our relationship with Israel, and should we be in a no-daylight situation with any country? Especially when we have tons of daylight between the parties in our own country. That's, I think, an important question and an odd situation to be in. We'll be back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show.
As it turns out, the revolution will not be televised. It's on the radio. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Gotta love John Yarmuth.
Great.
Fantastic. You do know it is possible to be Southern, white, and environmentally conscious. You do realize we all breathe air, right? We all drink water or beverages made from water. Bourbon is actually made from water. Beer's one of the big ingredients in making beer is
water.
Clean water. And I don't care how sweaty the can is in the ad. If you're having to make Bud Light out of coal-tainted stream water, there's no made from the mountain stream, the Rockies, which we, of course, ground down to a nub so that we could all have dirty fossil fuels for a little while longer, because wind energy is gay. I don't want big windmills. They ruin the landscape. I want giant, slothy, black, rolling,
oil-sucking machinery.
Yeah, BP. Hey, haven't you seen the ads? BP is cleaning up the Gulf. It's better than it was. They gave shrimp a haircut and gave him a new suit.
It's almost like they weren't responsible.
No. But through avoiding regulation, and then when they did follow the regulation, followed at the lowest possible point, and then avoiding doing it on all their... Hey, that didn't happen. look, man, there's hotel deals right up on the water. Sure, your feet will turn and kind of they'll swell up when you walk around there.
Sure.
But yeah, it is possible, and there are a lot of them actually.
Who doesn't want to film on their water?
Guess what? Conserving the environment and the nation we live in and protecting the people of this country from the actions of international companies is a very conservative value.
Is it?
At its root. Conserving things? I mean, it's
the basis of the word.
Yes. Right.
But it's, I thought you meant in terms of, like, corporations versus people,
no,
money versus
health. Modern conservatives are lying about their conservatism. They are not conservative at all. All they are protecting is, at best, some sort of cartoonish version of 50s America
that
they thought was somehow better.
I think conservative value, like as in conservative.
What conservative value do you think liberals don't have? The honest ones.
Oh,
family.
No, but
you know, the ability to read whatever you want, speak your mind, even own a gun. Quite frankly, I don't know any liberals who don't believe in regular normal gun ownership or whatever. Obviously, we're not big fans of surface to air missiles or things with 60 rounds in them or drummed machine guns.
But see, I think of conservative as a pejorative the same way some people think of liberal or progressive.
I know, that's what I mean. And if you're going to talk about the reclamation of words and the actual meaning of it, it's one of the reasons why conservatives are ahead. By the way, David Bender is joining us right now. Who is, are you here?
I am so here.
So great.
I have just joined the cast of All About Eve.
Hi, love.
Hi, love.
Bender's my fake TV husband.
Oh, yes.
And there it is. It's All About Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Eve used to call me her fake TV husband. Then she left town, and you guys have come in, and there it is. It's all done. She's is the star off the dressing room door? Is
yeah,
it gone
she,
now?
No, not at all. And as a matter of fact, I think she's this close to going, oh, Hal, like Mary
I'm
Tyler
scraping
Moore
moment. Stephanie's name. I think there's an N, an I, and an E left.
Right.
There we go. That's what I was expecting. I really wish I could see the visual of this. That's what I'm missing.
Yes, David Bender's is via ISDN, which is why he's so crystal clear. And it's so
is that what it is?
I'm crystal clear all the time. It's just, you can't always tell.
True. And by the way, one of the reasons why he is so crystal clear is because he's on the Progressive Voices network on which is available on the TuneIn app and other sources, of course, progressivevoices.com. So David, we are talking about a couple of obviously big issues, not the least of which is the president being in Israel right
now. Is that where he is? I hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
There's been no press coverage whatsoever.
Rumor has it.
Chuck Todd called me and said he's in Israel. What should I ask him?
Yeah, he spotted him there.
What should I ask him?
We got a couple minutes, and we're going to take a break, and we'll keep you on with us over the break.
Happy to hold.
Yes, thank you. It's a tough conversation to have when you're dealing with again, something that I think is more akin to the IRA versus the British government, but minus the idea that if you supported the rights of Ireland or you supported the rights of the British, you were never accused of being either for religious reasons.
Well, I think you made a great point before that, you know, we have this problem with Iran being a fundamentalist state.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is absolutely true that Israel was formed as a Jewish state.
Mm-hmm.
That was, you know, in 1950, the law of return, Jews from everywhere around the world were given a homeland. Now, there is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that Jews needed a homeland because they were being driven out, persecuted and slaughtered in the places that they lived.
Right.
So there is somewhat of a different historical context here, which is why you have the American Jewish community feeling such a strong kinship to this idea that Jews should be safe in the homeland that they created because they were persecuted. So this is where it does get complicated. I have some thoughts about that, and we can talk about them after the break.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's take a break in a minute. But here's...
Look at him getting you out to break on
he's,
time.
Oh, he's a total pro. Everything I know about radio, I...
You learned in kindergarten.
Yeah, I learned it from David
Bender.
And then forgot it, and then I have to call him. in the last minute and go, David, what time is the quarter hour break? What's the number for 911?
We'll be right back. That number again for the Stephanie Miller Show is
1-800-STEP-12. See what I mean?
He's like,
yeah, it's passive aggressive.
Love
but it works.
Me some Bender.
We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show with guest host David Bender. I'm kidding. All right, we'll be back. I'm actually moving into the sidecar now because David Bender is going to take the reins.
Where does that put me?
Huh?
Where does that put me?
In my lap. Where you belong.
Which is where he's wanted you the
entire time.
This is all a plot.
I'm speechless.
Yes.
I don't even know what to say.
I'm just the designated driver.
Exactly, right.
You guys have the party.
Yes, when I was my best friend in high school, Mike Ford, when I first moved to Chicago, my dad wouldn't let me take the car because he was worried that I would fool around with my girlfriend in it. When he didn't realize he went out of town for 3 days at a time on architecture jobs, I didn't need to. I fooled around in my own house in my own bed like a reasonable person. But on the occasion that my dad was home and I did have to get out of there and date this girl who lived so far away, it was annoying. Mike would have to drive me out there and then he'd have to listen to us make out all the way back. And it was like sad. He's like, he would tilt his rearview mirror up and turn the radio up. It was horrible. We'd just roll around. Like, it was pathetic. It was just so high school. I love it. Anyway,
was it also a Ford car? Because that would have been insult and injury.
Mike Ford
driving a Ford.
Yeah, my namesake, and I'm a chauffeur for teenagers, you know. All right. So this issue, I'm going to take some calls because I know you're a big fan. Yes.
Humans, love them.
And some of them have been holding on for quite a while. Let's go to Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl.
Hey guys, this is a good subject. It's not as touchy as you all are making it out to be, and it shouldn't be. Because one, when the hell did Israel become the 51st state of the United States of America?
Mm-hmm.
Two, when did it become politically okay to talk about San Francisco in bad ways, but not talk about Tel Aviv? And this right here is most important. I'm originally from the North, but I've lived in the South off and on my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that's in the South that used to spray paint swastikas and deface Jewish cemeteries and synagogues, now they are the biggest friends of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That's irony in itself, because their masters told them, no, the Jews aren't our enemy anymore, the Arabs are. I just find it fascinating that particularly in the South,
that's part
that
of
people used to hate the Jews, now they love the Jews. That is just, these evil evangelical hypocrites here are something else.
I will, it's an excellent point. I'll put this to David Bender. I don't necessarily think there's plenty of people out there who still hate the Jews in the same way that they hate everybody else, but there's certainly a group of evangelicals who are siding with Israel, not because of Israelis or even Jews for that matter, but because they think that's the site of Christ's return.
That's right. This isn't a turnaround. This isn't all of a sudden, we were mistaken all of those times when we were burning, you know, crosses and painting mm-hmm. swastikas. This is absolutely, and you can find it and they teach it, that the biblical prophecy that there has to be a state of Israel in order for Jesus to return.
Yeah.
Jews are the stalking horse for Jesus. And the irony of this, of course, is that when Jesus comes back, Jews go to hell.
Right.
I don't think that's
lost on them. I don't think that's not an accident. That's
no.
To borrow a phrase, an inconvenient truth for a lot of people dealing with evangelicals
to
talk about the war for Israel.
Let's see if Bibi Netanyahu will say that.
Because no, of course not.
No, they're just taking the help wherever they can get it.
Right.
That's the irony of it. Now,
or
now,
Mitt Romney's money or vice versa. Right.
To Jerry's point, though, it is whether there's a 51st state that is Israel is a democratic ally. It is important to have allies that share your worldview and share your form of government, and it is absolutely true that when those governments act in ways like our government acts, mm-hmm. that are anti-democratic, they need to be opposed by their own people. You have huge peace marches in Israel.
Right.
The people of Israel oppose the policies, the war policies, and oppressive policies of their government.
Right.
There is one interesting historical fact, and this is one I've been waiting to share for a long time, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. We almost had Israel as the 51st state, actually the 50th state, before the state was formed in the late 40s when Harry Truman was president. One of the get ready for this. Mm-hmm. Hang on to your Hollywood All About Eve hats. One of the Warner brothers, Harry Warner, commissioned a white paper, 45 pages of research, saying, "Mr. President," and he brought it directly to President Truman. The idea of Palestine is a terrible idea. If the Jewish homeland becomes Palestine, it will be in a constant state of war. No. What a surprise. Mm-hmm. You move into a neighborhood that doesn't want you, and then you're surprised when your neighbors act in the way that they've acted. Mm-hmm. He wanted Alaska. And he said to the president, we should give the Jewish people Alaska. Then all they have to worry about is Canadians.
Nobody has to worry about Canadians.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And there was a major effort. Obviously, it couldn't work, again, because of the biblical prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
This was not just about the safety of Jewish people from oppression. This
is about holy, some rocks being holier than others.
Exactly. But imagine, if you will, just let your mind wander back. Think if Harry Truman had said yes.
What the Middle East would look like today, what the entire, I mean...
And there'd be no Sarah Palin, or she'd be Jewish.
Right. And well.
Why? It's cold up here.
Yeah. Right.
That's the problem. It's not, it's not Florida.
Oh.
If Florida had been thrown into the deal, it might have worked.
You know, and arguably
it is.
And
I can do this because I'm a Floridian Jew. That's all I'm saying.
Right. By the way, I personally am one of the big believers that the creation of Israel, while there was a vast number of people who supported it as a protection for the Jewish people, uh-huh. as a guarantee of their rights as a people to exist, there was also a largely anti-Semitic move in creating their own country and sending them there. The anti-Semitic, and there certainly were parts of the U.S. government and other foreign governments at the same time. There was kind of a look. It, almost like a bar at the end of the night. You can't you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. And there was this idea that we don't really want the Jews to come to the United States. Not really. But if we give them a land, definitely. We could kind of pat ourselves on the back for doing something nice, and they can all go there.
So Palestine was like last call.
It was like, I'll tell you what it was. It was a Jewish equivalent of the Back to Africa movement. This racist idea that we'll free blacks, but we'll free them by sending them to, you know, Fredonia. We'll put them in Africa. We'll create a state with a big barbed wire fence around it. It'll be nothing like a prison.
Hail Fredonia.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
You had it right. This is all about the Bible.
Right.
Had it not been all of that is true. Everything you're saying is true, that it was a convenient thing for a lot of governments to say, not in my backyard, but the Jewish people from around the planet said, this is fulfilling the biblical imperative that we
right.
have that state in that place, and that Jerusalem is ours from 2,000 years ago. And there's something, because of that, you can't argue. It's not a rational discussion.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you're just, you know, it's like Rand Paul, for example, yesterday or day before yesterday on CNN, and they're talking about his personhood amendment, which, by the way, and this is very curious to me, somebody brought up on Twitter, and it seemed brilliant. I never really thought about it this way, but the personhood amendments put forth by the anti-abortion movement are actually have nothing to do with the pro-life movement, but are actually there to scuttle anti-personhood bills about corporatism, that when you put up to fight the corporate personhood, it waters the issue around the word personhood so that you can no longer use it, because the corporate personhood movement was actually gaining some steam, that corporations are not people. And so creating something, the word corporate personhood is an oxymoron, and it makes stark contrast. So it's easy to start, you know, it's a good, useful tool to message around that. And so people like Rand Paul are actually using the term personhood and putting bills they know aren't going to fly through simply so they can muddy the word personhood into an unusable phrase.
Do you think there's that much foresight into it?
I absolutely do. From their standpoint, that guy's They're not religious conservatives. They use it as a tool to stay in elected office in certain parts of the country. Ron and Rand, both of them. But they're not, you know.
But really, the intention of using the word personhood.
It's corporate. These are corporate libertarians. They're laissez-faire economic people. They have no real care about, I think, social issues, and that's what makes them liars.
So what about a baby corporation?
Yeah, right. Well,
does it have any rights?
How about this? Does my if I form a corporation on LegalZoom this afternoon at conception, does it have? Can I be bailed out by the government?
As a matter of fact, the statement you just made means that you can be bailed out by the government.
Right. That's what I mean. I just thought about
an intention.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because the sin of the mind is the same as the sin of the body.
There it is.
So that leads us into a really distinct point. And we just got about a minute left, and David Benner, perhaps you can explain to us how the message versus the reality. Obviously, and this comes up, the GOP rebranding in 10 seconds. Yeah. Is propaganda versus policy. This is what I really think. They've decided to go with propaganda because they have no policy that anybody will stomach or like. And it's almost as if they're taking a page out of how the Israeli-Palestinian conflict has been dealt with over the years. It's really about the war of words. You can't just kill people and rockets come this way without ever getting to the policies that start the problem or deal with the problem in the long term.
Well, since Jim Ward isn't here, I'll play that part. And yeah. I can't do his voice, but then neither can he. Mm-hmm. There are too many. Mm-hmm. Here's the answer, and I can do it in 30 seconds, and it goes like this. Mm-hmm. The Republicans don't have policy because they're not interested in government. If they were, they would be thinking about solutions which require policies. Propaganda is all they do, and that mm-hmm. goes back to, thank you, Jim Ward, the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
This is that idea. This is the idea of lying repeatedly, largely, and consistently so that people believe the lies as truth. Policy is never part of their agenda because they don't want government to work. Simple as that.
Right. Thank you so much, David Benner, for joining us on this, because this is such a deep issue. And, of course, the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn is where you can go for all your favorite progressive talkers, including Stephanie Miller,
yes.
Bill Press. They do a really cool thing because they're on TuneIn. Is at the top of the hour when other stations are playing commercials and those kind of other things, which vary station to station across the entire country. When you're listening, they have a thing called Top of the Hour where they have people like David Benner, our dear friend John Sinton, who's one of the people behind Progressive Voices, contacted angry black lady Imani Gandhi just yesterday.
Oh, nice.
And she will be a part of that as well. So
great.
They take 5 minutes
great.
To do issues of the day that are, hot pieces of news when you'd normally be hearing about mattresses.
And coming up soon,
yes.
Politically Direct with David Benner
yes.
is going to be returning to the Progressive Voices channel, and I can't wait to have both of you back on. We can do this again, all about Eve in perpetuity.
Right. Where David Benner plays Eve.
Yes, he does. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yes, I'm going to end up being a stable boy. I just know it.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, David Benner, for calling in.
Thank you, guys.
Greatly appreciate it. David Benner, everybody.
Bye, my love.
Yes.
Bye.
Fantastic. You two are too cute. We'll be back right after this. More of the Stephanie Miller Show. And more of your calls about, our relationship with Israel. And here's a thought before we go to break. Wrap your head around this. Where there is no daylight, there is darkness. We'll be back.
Okay. I don't get it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, and thanks to David Benner and John Yarmuth for joining us this hour. Great conversations and important topics, and we'll continue that with your calls. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. In the next hour, we have Rick Overton for the whole hour. He's going to be joining us in studio. If you don't know Rick Overton, don't talk to me. Don't call in.
Get to
unfollow
know
me on Twitter. Don't unlike the Hal Sparks Fang page on Facebook. I don't want
to
hear.
You are super committed to Rick.
He's a good guy.
Does he know how committed you are?
Of course
to him?
He does.
Okay.
Yeah, we're dear friends.
Is it mutual?
No, not
is
at all.
Is he that into you?
Really? That's where you had to go with it?
He's just not that into you.
You can't just have like a comedian bromance. That's okay. Let's continue this because what I said before the break was that, you know, where there is no daylight, there's darkness. That we're always talking about how there's no daylight between us and Israel. There's no daylight. There must be no daylight between our leaders. There must be no daylight. Well, daylight is actually where you can get a good look at stuff. And if you continually have no daylight between you and anybody else, you're either lying to cover your differences or you're avoiding them entirely. And so there must be daylight between our country's leaders and every other country's because they will not always be 100% in sync. I'm curious to hear what our callers say. Let's go to Debbie in Albuquerque. Hi, Debbie.
Yeah, listen, I have something to talk about. Just a theory, mind you, because I never hear anybody talk about this.
Okay.
Let's just suppose Abraham got it wrong. When he was told the Jewish people supposedly were the chosen ones, mm-hmm. What if God meant Homo sapiens? Because we have all sorts of hominoids we found throughout the planet.
Right.
Also, what if he said, the land is yours? What if he meant the planet? That would change the dynamic of everything, of saying supposedly Israel belongs to the Jewish people. Because if that's how they truly believe, why do they need these weapons? Wouldn't God just sort of step in and protect them?
Well, that's always been the issue. That's always been the issue with any kind of protected people, or even when people call themselves the master race, and you get like that dude Scott Terry standing up at CPAC and saying, you know, like kind of is white nationalist and talking about how important white people are. Well, then be important. Don't tell me about how important you are. Show me how important. You do something important. You're not. You're running a newsletter about how awesome you are is not the same thing as being an inventor. You didn't create the cotton gin. You didn't create the axle. You're not creating the new level of solar and wind energy. If you're standing next to an East Indian guy who happens to have started a social networking site or a business methodology on the internet, and you're arguing for your white supremacy simply because of the color of your skin, it's absurd. And that's where the problem, I think, comes in when religion is tied to race, and race and religion are tied to a particular either geographical space or, I mean, if there was something about, if Wiccans decided to claim the pyramids and there was nothing anybody could do about it at some point, and we don't kind of go, yeah, it's ridiculous, but not any more ridiculous than sacred burial grounds, you know, vampires not being able to enter churches and the existence of Israel as the only homeland of Jewish people. There's a certain point where you get into big trouble there because it's based on this idea. And when you go to the Abrahamic traditions, you say maybe Abraham got it wrong.
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Listen,
we caused the problem in the Middle East. In 53, we took the democratic government of Iran and overthrew it.
Yes.
Because they nationalized the oil. Now, fast forward to the future, and we're mad because they didn't like the Shah of Iran, because a lot of people don't know history. Mm-hmm. So they turn around and say, well, why is it a mess? Well, you know what? We caused the mess.
Well, we were...
The British said no.
Yes. I think our intervention, absolutely. American interventionism and British interventionism and imperialism throughout the ages has a long history, and you cannot have that history without blowback. And people will argue that everything from 9/11 to World War II was blowback for stuff going on in World War I. And at a certain point, we all got to get off the ride.
Talking about.
Yeah, we all got to get off the ride.
Talking about.
Yes.
Are you talking about 9/11 of 73 in Chile that we did? Or are you talking about 9/11 in New York City?
Right, exactly.
There's two of them.
I agree. The point I'm trying to make is that at some point, policy requires daylight. It requires us stepping back and going, let's assess how we're behaving now. And start, you know, everybody can get involved in a fight. Everybody can get a grudge going with a family member for a long time. But it takes the stronger person to stand back and say, wait a minute. How are we both behaving badly? Let's stop the bad behavior and start the path to getting it better. I appreciate you bringing up that point, Debbie. Great conversation. Let's get one more call before we have to take the break. But Susan in Seattle, Washington thinks a two-state solution might not work. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I'm so enjoying this week with you, Hal.
Oh, thank you.
And Jackie. Aww, and Tony,
thanks.
Too. He's so cute.
He's adorable.
I got
under the premise a comic shall lead them, I got my feelings about the Middle East based on Maysoon Zaid, but believe it or not. Mm-hmm. She says that a one-state solution is the only solution because the two cultures have become so integrated over the years that there is no way to separate those states, that mm-hmm. it should be a secular government ruling, you know,
right.
and that everybody should have equal rights. And I know she makes a whole lot more sense out of it than I can, but somebody should really interview her on this.
You mean,
I
mean kind of a United States of Israel-Palestine?
Right.
I mean, arguably, that's really what we're talking about. That's the awkward part of the American relationship, specifically with the Israeli government, in that
right.
the Israeli
what
government is based on a singularity
put
of religion.
Government up like
right.
that. What if we had to have a secular, a religious government? What theocracy would rule us?
Well, that's
I mean,
the
it
argument.
Would be war instantly war.
Absolutely, that's the argument that you get in trouble with. And thank you for the call. When evangelicals decide that the Ten Commandments belong outside of every courthouse. And you should dictate based on one group's religious views about gay marriage, for example. We're not that kind of country. Should we tolerate it in other countries? It's interesting. Is it an act of tolerance or is it an act of suppression? Do we support it? We'll be back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. I don't think this issue is going to go away.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome back to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph for just one more day. That's right, tomorrow
no.
is our last day, Jackie. That's it. We've had so much fun.
How will
so,
I get through a week without seeing you every day?
That's what everybody says once they hang out with me for 5 days in a row. That's true. I have that on tape. I make
You're
people,
like my vitamin.
I make people say that on tape at the end of every week. Anybody I meet who I've worked with for a week, I don't know how I'm going to... Can I get you a recording of that? I'm going to make in my biopic when I'm 95 and they're running that. We never gave him an Oscar but he deserved one, so we're going to drag him out when he's barely able to walk. We'll play a series of tapes going, I don't know how I spent a week without house bars in my life. Speaking of people that you shouldn't have to spend a week without experiencing, Rick Overton joins us in studio today. That's right. Viewers on Current, you can see him wearing his fresh headphones that we gave him.
That's right. I've got the headphone of yesterday.
That's right.
You're wearing the headphones
the earbuds of tomorrow. Right.
What
yes.
is Tony's then?
Tony's retro. He's yeah.
These are awesome headphones.
He's a,
they look pretty powerful.
I
man.
Think there's a head in there somewhere.
This is so Tony can ignore the show entirely and just DJ.
I'm just listening to music while you're talking to him.
Somewhere in another country, they're playing songs that he is pushing buttons on.
I'm sound crushing your head.
Right from far, far away. Rick, we were talking about in the last hour, and we've got a lot of calls about this, and we're going to continue to have them. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We will get to you guys that's in there. And I said after I have this discussion about the Israeli government and the actions of the Israeli government and our relationship with the Israeli government that I will have to hide in an organization that will protect me from the blowback. So I'll either have to become a Scientologist or a Freemason. I'm leaving that up to the crowd. They can pick which one.
I said Scientology only because I think they're bigger
in
show
business. Right.
Oh. And I think
yeah.
that would be useful for
But help. I actually know, you know, I know some Freemasons who are in showbiz, quite a few of them actually. Big in the R&B community, which of course I am huge in.
You don't really need their help there.
No,
you're,
not
you're
at
good.
All. Yeah, I've got my white suit and I'm ready to dance. Look. This is... the history of what got us here is part of the conversation that needs to be had. And you said something really interesting about the creation of Israel and the possible root of that being a resource-based.
Yeah, put everybody that could fight near each other so while they're battling, go in, England grabs the oil, you know.
Right. And so during World War I, World War II, that was a period when we knew...
Everything runs on this juice for a while now.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
so whoever has this, whoever controls the spice, controls the mind. You
yeah.
know, it's a primary item to have a hand on.
Right. And considering what the British did for tea, it's no, you know, in India, Yes, right.
It's get a hold of something that everyone's insane for.
Yeah.
Be the one that is at the wheel of it when everyone shows up to buy it.
Yes.
Which kind of, you know, all through history, someone's always found a thing, salt, spice, whatever it is.
Right.
And open a trade line.
Right. Salt being specific, but spices being something you can grow, they were a resource-based economy point, but you could create your own. You know, FCOJ, the frozen concentrated orange juice, big factor in our stock market. Big, you know, FCOJ futures are so big that they were actually they and the wheat crop were actually a plot point in trading places.
I was just going to say that's the best way anyone would know.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's commodities. The difference, though, is, you know, if you look at the things that have been done in the name of just getting chocolate out of South America,
right.
And that's just something people want. That's not something people need. Not that way. Anyways, oil specifically, when you're sitting on what other people need for their entire economy to go rolling, you create a certain level of power for yourself that is almost religious, which is, you know, curious. It is beyond question. It's not like, how do we go? Because we could go over here, much like an atheist goes to someone who's hyper-religious and goes, you don't have the window to God. I can believe in my own worth.
Mm-hmm.
And without it. A scientist can go, okay, oil's not the only way. What do we got? We got sun, we got hydrogen, we've got wind power, we've got all these other options.
Natural gas. Because the brain, and it comes, everything's boiling down. All the political parties, all the religious beliefs are breaking down to someone found the Da Vinci Code to the brain chemistry of that kind of person and makes a honey trap for them.
Mm-hmm.
For that personality type.
Right.
Certainly, you know, the Glenn Becks of the world have made a honey trap for people that are like Glenn Beck.
Well, yeah.
And
well,
finally a guy broadcasting what the thoughts are in my own
head. Well, the character anyways, because let's be really clear. Glenn Beck is not a prepper, but he drives the preppers to collect bean cans. You know what I mean? There's an element where, you know, I'll make a killing on the end of the world that never comes.
Sure. Like the very top racists probably aren't racist. They just know that's a very useful tool for dividing people.
Exactly. Although they may have just be habitually racist.
Yeah, right.
But don't you have to be a certain kind of person to even be willing to tap into that?
That's what I'm saying. You have to be a certain kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
It's breaking down to kinds of people. That part that, well, let's not make this personal. Well, then you're never going to solve it.
Right.
Ever. Because that's what this is really. It's breaking off to those kinds of people. There's just certain types. You'll hear them in the calls.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it just beat for beat. Certain kinds of things
but
just
keep
showing up.
But you're missing a moral chip to be able to feel okay exploiting.
I just think you use your moral chip differently. That's the part we miss. When you think of like kind of the corporate overlord types and the people who are just kind of how can they poison the waters and streams to do this or whatever, well, to them there's a protection racket going on. Their side needs to grab as much as they can because it's all going to run out one day. This is only a temporary, especially when it comes to fossil fuels. We got to skim and grab and skim and grab for and guarantee our progeny a protected class place, and how we do it is moral because I'm protecting my families and my heirs.
Morality reinvents itself per circumstance.
Right.
Whenever it needs to be like one of those stick-em things you put up a note, you can stick it to anything.
Oh, yeah.
Like pride can attach like that to anything, like gum. And
every state house where they've tried to put the Ten Commandments has the death penalty.
Yeah.
There's not a single state that has outlawed the death penalty that I know of, and there may be one, but where a legislator has gotten anywhere where they actually have put up the Ten Commandments where they don't actually order someone to die for a crime when it says thou shalt not kill. There's no subsection B, well, if you bonk somebody on the head and we like that person, kill him then, or in a war or anything. It doesn't say any of that. It says vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, later in the book, which means I'll do all the killing, you guys shut up and grow wheat. But it's thou shalt not kill. But it also is.
There's no footnote.
No footnote. No secondary affectation. But everywhere that they've tried to put it up, also the death penalty.
So there's the kind of human that can add the two things and go, because it's me, it's different. Or because it's me and my group, it's different.
Yeah.
And something
but
about.
Isn't there an inherent lack of evolution to that? I mean, shouldn't you be able to see beyond your scope?
Well, scientifically, if it keeps happening, it has to be dealt with as such. You know, it can't say, well, I wish it was something else. Now,
I know,
you gotta
in my
get,
utopian world,
roll the sleeve
has
up
a
and
stronger moral compass.
But
yeah.
Here's where the scientist kicks in. Okay, puzzle presented, start solving puzzle.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in a sense, if you look at it from the religious, it's habitual behavior. And the assumption that habitual behavior, where it becomes tradition, because it's been around so long that it actually has worth based on the fact that we've done it this long and it hasn't killed us, completely. You know, that hasn't wiped us out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, arguably, it hasn't. As bad as it's gotten, this life is kicking death's ass right now. There's 9 billion people on the planet by 2017 they're looking at. Obviously, the parts of where we're keeping people alive are outweighing the parts where we kill them off. The problem is the ideology that kills us off when we do bother to do that is getting better and better tools for doing it. And when it decides to do it, it'll be really,
like
really
warfare.
Bad. Exactly. Like nuclear warfare, bioweapons, and arguably bad science. We're going to, on that note, we'll be back with more of the intellectual musings of Rick Overton clarifying the scientific method for all of you out there. And we're going to take your calls. 1-800-STEF-12 is our number. And we'll talk to you about maybe the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is a good allegory for almost every conflict that we have found ourselves in an impasse on, be it science and religion, be it territorial, be it immigration in the United States, be it pro-life, pro-choice. You know, are we at that point where it's an ideological divide? And since we're dealing with ether, you know, bottling it while it's floating in the air becomes the hard part. We'll be back right after this.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. Do we have a Roland update? Have we had one today, or are they? Is he just exhausted?
I have not heard from them today.
Is he wrapped up like a burrito in some sort of that cloth they put meat, around meat in Rocky?
I see a grape leaf.
Huh?
Just one big grape leaf.
One giant, like. Yeah, he's rolled, yeah. He's the stuffed grape leaves, yeah, but with Roland inside instead of rice. their way, and of course, I have this theory that Steph doesn't do any of that stuff at that spa, that she just lures Roland there and laughs about it.
Rolling down the river.
Right.
And go on these massive hikes.
Yeah.
And Roland said he's been playing a lot of tennis.
Mm-hmm.
And then I assume they convene at some point in the mess hall.
But
cafeteria.
The rest of the time she's behind the mirror in his hotel room watching the sweat collapse. After this, or come back up from the spa like itching, going, what was that salt scrub? You know, like, was it salt? We put turmeric in the and he's allergic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have this theory that this is just that. That Steph is just playing one giant, massive prank on Roland to get back for, one bad hotel room. That's a theory. I will stick to it. We're going to take some calls, by the way, because, and we'll get through as many of them as I can. The people who are on there, try to get your point out as quickly as possible, because I know between you're going to be on tangent patrol.
I am on tangent
patrol. Because
I'm
between
doing a
Rick and I,
job.
We can go anywhere.
My tangent lasso is ready to go.
Yeah, we go off-road.
Let's go to Paul in Nevada, because you've been holding on the longest. Hey, Paul, how are you? Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. That was Carl in Chicago. I'm sorry. And then we'll get to Paul.
Hey.
Hi, Carl.
Hello. Hey, I'm the official Norse mythologist of the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, thank goodness. Does mother know you weareth her drapes? go ahead. And yes, and insofar as Norse mythology goes and the warring between parties, this worked out well for the Vikings, I think, didn't it? Are you there? Did we lose him? Oh, we lost him. Why did we lose him? Oh,
you pushed some sort of
no, I didn't push anything.
Button.
I was talking about, I pushed a button
I
on her.
To hear his
I pushed
Norse.
A button on Stephanie's box, and Thor disappeared. That's what happens.
I'm wondering if I triggered the Santa story. You know, why the flying reindeer fly.
Why is that?
because they eat a fungus that's hallucinogenic, and they pee in the snow, and Nordic shaman make a snow cone out of deer whiz that they trip on, and then they think the deer are flying, and that's why they have flying reindeer. That's the actual reason.
Are you telling me there is no Santa?
No, that's where the
right here.
That's where the mythology of flying reindeer pulling a sled came from, was because these deer eat this fungus and they pee out the remnant, and the Norse guys would eat it, and they would get high off of this deer with a snow cone, honestly, right?
That's the story.
Yeah, and that they would come up, while they were high on deer with fungal pee, they would come up with this, which is, by the way, where most religious methodology, either
burning bush. The most popular flavor would be
the burning
deer
pee.
Do we have any more deer with?
We're going to take one more call, and then I'm going to tell you my theory about the burning bush, and I'm totally right about it.
All right.
Okay, we'll do this. We'll go to, here's Paul in Nevada. Hey, Paul.
What's going on, Hal? Listen, I would really like to make two quick statements.
Sure.
First of all, I know that you want everybody to make a quick statement because you got a lot of people, you know.
Yes.
But, you know, you guys get caught up and you carry on, and there, you know, there's people on the phone. I've been on since 7:17. I know there's a lot of other people that are waiting to talk to you.
It's true. Absolutely. We're busy making a radio show. I apologize. We don't get
talking.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a couple podcasts too, but okay, here's my point. I believe that the Israelis who have been spying on us since the 60s are actually holding something over the U.S., you know, something that would outrage the American people to the point where, you know, they would really have to face the music. One example would be the USS Liberty, and another one would be some of the, you know, like the My Lai massacre in Vietnam. You know, maybe some other possible violations.
Understood,
in
right.
Vietnam.
And we'll cover that. And then your other point, I want to make sure you get it in.
The other point is, you know, when I make, you know, these claims, my feelings, point of view, that, you know, right now the right-wing Israelis are actually, in a lot of ways, acting like the people they hate the most.
Yeah.
You know, the Nazis, in that they have isolated the Palestinians from medical equipment, medical attention, drinking water, you know, good clothes.
They certainly control the economic system just by standing outside of it and limiting what gets in and out, using the idea of terrorism and the rockets from Gaza as the reasoning for doing so, never realizing that one of the reasons why you want to fire a rocket into Israel might be that your kid died of a very easily curable disease and you couldn't get penicillin because the Israelis don't trust you to have a boat come in because they think there'll be guns in the bottom. So you hide guns in the bottom of a boat to fire back at the people who didn't let the penicillin in. And then the Israelis go, well, they had guns in the bottom of that last boat. You're absolutely right. And I appreciate you hanging on for as long as you did. They're both very important points. So let's start with the first one. Is Israel blackmailing the United States? At the outrage point, I don't know that, unfortunately, the American people don't get outraged. Not that way. Not the way they should. Mm. And the lies that got us into the Iraq War and the damage done to innocent people because of the Iraq War are overt. There is no question about them. We covered it on the show yesterday, Rick. We were having people call in with their favorite lie leading up to it. Nobody questions that these were lies now. And not misstatements, not mistakes, not we got the intelligence
flat
wrong.
Flat out lies.
Flat out
no,
lies.
The victory in it all is that the fact that that's been revealed and everything just beep, beep, right back to traffic again.
Right.
No one, you know, because we're numb, because we've had other lied to events so much, we're just stuck in this sick marriage because of the kids, you know.
But why is it that we don't get outraged the way we should or used to?
Because when you're in danger of losing your home, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and minimum wage is not keeping up to what the actual cost of living is.
Desperation makes you blot out the other
sensation. And that's part of the plan. I mean, arguably, these things go hand in hand. Absolutely. You keep people to where their lives are so close to being frazzled. One of the values of a low minimum wage, one of the values of workers feeling insecure, one of the values of allowing illegal immigration to come in and take jobs and never dealing with it as a solution, one of the reasons the Republicans Republicans are not for guest worker programs and all those kind of things is because the cheapness of that labor scares people who work for a living that one day these illegals are going to come and take their jobs. And so they're worried about that. And they're worried about, you know, whether the bank owns their mortgage or not and how they're going to deal with that part of it and whether they're going to lose their job. So you don't dealing with the idea that we lied our way into the Iraq war when it wasn't even on television that much, when we hid it from ourselves along with the Afghanistan war. You keep it in a pocket, you keep it off the news that much, and I've got too many problems to deal with it.
Is there an idea of where that tipping point is, where we can get people from being...
We are.
Being scared to being angry.
Right.
That's it. We're you know, midpoint on it. The knife's edge looks like a flat plane on an electron microscope.
Right. After you get close enough to it, it flattens out.
It flattens out. We're that close to it. But you're going to see it any day now. You saw it last year with the Occupy.
Yeah. We'll take a break and we'll come back and I'll explain the burning bush, which I didn't get a chance to do this time around. And more from Rick on how we're there, how we're at the moment. And I agree. We'll be back. Mm-hmm. Sparks filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation with Jackie Schechner and Rick Overton in the sidecar. So we're talking about how actually the Middle East peace process between the Israelis and the Palestinians is actually a great metaphor for consistent conflict in a lot of different areas and how it's used by both sides, arguably, to create this circular point where it's almost like a plant that other people have figured out how to live off the fruit of constant conflict.
Right.
For example. The military-industrial complex is the easiest one. You know, two sides selling weapons. One side selling weapons to both sides.
You know, if we went up against Iran today, mm-hmm. you know what you'd be facing.
American weaponry? Tomcats. Yeah.
F-14 Top Gun Tomcats that we sold them, you would know how it flies at least, because it's ours.
Right. And if it wasn't ours, it was the company that sold us ours, made a different, slightly modified version through their European subsidiary.
They just bought ours. They just repainted ours.
Yeah.
Put a mustache on it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or a big red, painted it red, put a big black X on the side of it, and Snoopy in the, you know. But in all honesty, we have the Norse dude back. I want to make sure that he gets in there. And then I will tell the story of why the bush was burning when Moses went up there.
Norse dude!
Hey, Carl.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. You didn't expect that kind of a welcome back, did you?
I totally did not. That's awesome. About the Israel thing, it just blows my mind that land claims and international policy are fundamentally based on myth and poetry from thousands of years ago. It's like if we were sending Navy SEALs into the Rocky Mountains to hunt trolls and ice giants.
Or to guarantee the rights of people who believe that trolls and ice giants left that land to them.
Well, exactly. I mean, I am speechless.
It's speechless, right? Well, that's where the conversation, much like we were talking, and thank you. Goodbye, Carl Norris, dude. There you go. Call in any time because we'll actually talk about some of the mythological aspects of that. Anyways,
and they will make you that noise.
Absolutely. Okay, so here's how I think the burning bush happened. So Moses goes up the hill.
Yeah.
And he's sick of everybody acting like jackasses.
Yeah.
And he goes up the hill, and the bush catches on fire. And he's up there for 3 days, right? And God speaks to him through the burning bush and says, "These are my laws."
Yeah.
And I want you to give these to my people. And of course, Mel Brooks famously making the, "I give you these 15." Crap.
10.
Ten commandments, right. Don't damn it. He actually says oi, which is so beautiful.
Oi.
It's like when he gets robbed. He parts the Red Sea in History of the World so that Gregory Hines and them can escape. And then when he puts his hands down, the river shuts or whatever, and he's being held up from behind. And he goes, an old man, they don't let you live, they don't let you breathe. So funny that he's being held up. So Moses goes up the hill because he's sick and tired, and he's going to meditate on the hill about what to do and try to hear God's voice, which was our own separation of lobes, you know, in our brain, you know, that the bicameral act of the mind where it's separated in two parts, right, where you stopped, you started hearing voices that didn't directly sound like your own. The observer, they call it in a lot of philosophy. Was,
one faces forward, one faces backwards.
Right.
And the memory part faces back, the other part invents.
Right. So you remember, for example.
Okay, wait. So he's on the.
I'm going to, don't worry. Okay. Thank you, Tangent Police, okay, but it's important. Good. So he goes up to listen to the part
I
of his.
I thought maybe we lost
he
it.
Goes up to the hill to talk to the part of his brain that remembers where he put stuff.
Okay.
It's the religious equivalent of going, where are my keys? And he goes up to the top of the hill, we have lost the keys to the kingdom, where are they? And he goes up the hill, and the burning bush lights up, and he says that it spoke to him, and it gave him the Ten Commandments. And he comes down, and he says, "These are the commandments of my people." And these are, and they're acting like, and they're making a gold calf, which is how they used to pagan worship, and it was a regular religious rite. And they went back to the old ways, and he went, "These are supposed to be the new." And he smashes the tablets, a sure sign that he chiseled them himself.
Right.
Because I don't care how you feel, how angry you are, if God gives you something, you don't go,
"You
know what the hell, you jerks!" And you tiptoe away holding them. These are from God. So, anyway, he chiseled. It took
just,
him through.
Just eBay alone.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, you could read the
FBI. Are you
no,
nuts?
He chiseled them himself up on the hill. It took him 3 days to do it because it's hard to make a U with a chisel. And
storage wars.
Like, yeah.
Look at this.
I found the Ark of the Covenant in a bunch of boxes. So, it's safe. That's all you need to know. So he comes back. He comes, yeah, right. He comes, for those of you at home, Rick just did the melting Nazi face. So he comes back down the hill. Trust me, this is exactly how it played out. He spent 3 days chiseling these things because he's trying to write the O in covet. And I know they were in Hebrew. Relax. I'm just making a joke. It's hard to make an O with a chiseling. Like, he broke another rock.
Perfect circle.
And they had to be nicely shaped, too. They had to look like tombstones for some reason.
Well, always go over it with a Sharpie first.
That's a good idea, right? That's what he didn't do. He didn't have the chisel equivalent of a pencil, so he could do a pencil drawing and then ink it later. But, which is actually what they did. They scratched it. Never mind. Anyway, so, Tangent Police, where are you?
Are you sure? This is permanent.
Yeah. So he goes up the hill. He chisels these tablets for 3 days. He finally gets a draft that he's comfortable with. And he comes back down the hill, and he gets mad, and he says, he smashes them. And
I've got to start over.
And so after chastising his people, he kind of gets everybody back in line, and they wander the desert for 40 years because they disregarded and built a calf or whatever. But the point being is that at some point somebody went, we saw you up on the hill, and why'd you make if you were communing with God, did you get cold? How are you in the presence of God, and you... Why'd you have to light a fire if you were up there the 3 days? I mean, honestly, if you're speaking directly to God, would you be cold? Wouldn't you be in the presence of the Almighty? Why would you have any needs? We didn't see you eat, although he probably, killed something and ate it while he was up there, or ate some juniper berries. Life of Brian. But then he built a fire. Because it's cold up on the mountain. Explaining why you had to build a fire when you were in the presence of God to tribal people is a very difficult thing to do. So he went, no, God spoke to me through the fire. I didn't start a fire at all. It just started on its own. And that's where the voice of God came from.
Well, some people also believe when you stare into flame, it activates a meditative portion of your brain.
Sure.
It can lock your head in place. Well, you can play a video of a fire in a room and a video of girls doing aerobics. And some people just click, lock their brain on the fire part. No matter what.
Hence the philosophical depth of Chevy Chase's line in Caddyshack, where when his
Grand
school,
Canyon,
where, no, where his school, he goes, you're gonna go to college, Danny? And he goes, yeah, I talked to a guidance counselor once. He said I should be a fire watcher.
I remember that.
That's true. Okay, let's take some of these right. calls because you got Denise in Chicago. Hi, Denise.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi, Denise.
Hello. Hey,
yes, you're on.
We're having a good time, Denise. Hello.
Yes.
I could just listen to you while you crack me up. We have the same thing, too. Okay, here's my deal. I got these friends. I got a girlfriend. We're all, different religions, but her sister, they're like, you know, evangelists here. She's better than everybody else, you know. And,
sure.
And she's better than us. But her friends and all these people go to Israel and hang out, and they got all these buses and airplanes, and they go to Israel. What is that all about? I don't get it.
Well, I'll tell you one last look at it. Yeah, right. Wow. I think there's something kind of colloquial and tribal about it. I find I have tribal reflexes about places that I don't actually have any direct connection to. If I go to Washington, D.C., or if I go to Boston where they do the Freedom Walk, or Philadelphia where, you know, a lot of the initial documents were written and those kind of things, and you walk around those areas, there's something good about that history. You know what I mean? And that was just 200.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah. It's something like... That was just 200 years ago, but it was the birth of our nation, and it was the root of our idea, which was a terrific thing.
It's a place that should be here hundreds, thousands of years from now.
Yes.
If it weren't for another competing religion that wants that place gone, so their Jesus guy comes back.
Right, exactly. And so Israel actually has two points of interest for, like, obviously Jews for the Temple on the Mount and the Wailing Wall and sites like that that are steeped with history. They're steeped with almost the identical amount of history as, let's say, the Roman ruins themselves, but there was no religious base. That was a governmental base. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, governments fall, religions tend to power through because governments have to live up to a standard and maintain it. Religions do not. They can just scare you into staying. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, they raise money there. They do all kinds of crazy stuff, though. I mean, they recruit you to go.
Have to.
Well, there's a birthright, too. I mean, there's a sense of...
Birthright.
Right. Within the Jewish community, there's a sense of birthright. You have to go to Israel and...
These people are not Jewish. They're CRCs.
They're Christians. But it's the same thing. They believe that they're, because Jesus was Jewish and he was actually the Messiah and Jews didn't choose him as the Messiah, they think another person is going to come along because he wasn't agreed upon, that Jesus is the actual Messiah, and by them they are the chosen people because they followed the real Messiah. That's why they believe that they have a right to that land as well. That's where Sarah Palin thinks. That's what Michelle Bachmann thinks. Mm-hmm. That's where they really come from. And now here's what you need to know. These people view Jesus as a product. That's why every hymn is a jingle for the product. It's basically, try Jesus, you'll like it, it's got vitamin C. I mean, ultimately, that's what hymns are for.
Have you told the new pope this? We should let the new pope know that.
Believe me, if you want to talk about dominant theme, listen to Lenny Bruce back in the day talking about the papacy and stuff. Thank you so much for the call. The pilgrimage part of it is true of a lot of different places. I mean, I know, you know, people who are... they're Eastern European or something like that, and they just really want to go back to, you know, they've never been to Eastern Europe or the Slavic countries or whatever, but just to go see it, because that's where the people before the people.
There's just places that hold an emotional connection for certain people.
Right, but it's interesting, though, that in the case of the Jewish people in Israel, there's a great worldwide with the, you know, obviously the anti-Semitic world being not part of this, and other people who don't believe in the holiness of general lands or whatever, there's protection for that insofar as Israel. However, I'm sure the Indians that originally inhabited Wisconsin have the exact same feeling about that land, but they were nudged into the Dakotas, into the crappy valleys that don't grow anything. Mm-hmm. So as much respect and as we have for the depth of the religious connection to that we have with Jews and Israelis and that land, mm-hmm. it is amazing how we shrug off, for example, Native American connections or Aboriginal connections in the case of Australia, or look at the territorial fights between the Tutsi and the Hutu, and go almost in a racist sense, well, the Tutsi and the Hutus, of course they're going to be fighting. They're black people. Nobody cares who owns that land. But when the Israelis and the Palestinians do, it's worthy of international attention because we got in early and we've been
brain
involved.
Chemistry again. It's what I recognize and I have a file for in my brain. I will then empathize with. I reserve empathy the further from my type I go. It's a software glitch in the human brain.
Hence why Christians took over pagan holidays, because they were deeply entrenched.
The snakes chased out of Ireland. Lives in Ireland?
Yeah.
You can't keep a snake in Ireland.
They were just druids. Those were druids. The snakes they were talking about that St. Patrick chased out were actually the druids. But Christmas was not a Christian holiday. It's a seasonal affective disorder holiday. It's to keep you happy at the lowest
really?
Point of the winter. Absolutely.
It's
harvest
it's
holiday.
At the
we
sun's
gotta,
rebirth
yeah,
point.
The longest day of the year.
It's the darkest night horizon. Of the year. It's when everybody, look at seasonal affective disorder and the suicide rates and tell me that when you were in a tribal society, that didn't happen right back then. You went, let's throw a party.
Less vitamin
somebody,
D.
Something to look forward to and we'll eat all the stuff that's going to go rotten before the end of the winter. It's it. And the Christians rolled.
Pragmatic.
Yeah. Jesus was arguably born in the summer. If you look at, you know, if you look at a historical sense of if he actually existed. We had to take a break because we could do this discussion forever. Obviously, people have been having it for 2,000 years.
This isn't new?
No. But the point is, it's dominant theme that makes you choose those holidays. It's, you know, Halloween was one of the rare exceptions.
Environmental theme.
Yeah.
It's what you had and what you didn't have and needed.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back with more of the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in with Jackie Schechner and Rick Overton joining us today. And boy, we're just running her ragged with
my
the tangent
IQ.
Police.
Right. Oh my God, this is so amazing. It's all anybody in my class is talking about.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
See what I mean? Look, here's Jackie, and now she's bobbing her head. You can say what you will about metal, but there's something that listen for the warmth of a distorted guitar.
Oh, I love me some good music.
Okay, we got to take some calls in. I don't want to get on another big tangent. But and Rick and I have been awesome about dominant theme. But you know that I think
you
his name is
Masa
Hiramoto, the guy who did the stuff about water crystals.
She missed it because he's dominating.
Yes, totally. As a as my nature, you know how pushy I am in general. The guy who did the water crystals.
Secret
thing,
Life of Water.
Yeah, yeah. Where he did, he took bottles of water and he wrote the words love on them, or he focused on, meditated on them and used loving thoughts. And then they would put them under an electron microscope and they look at how the crystals froze, and they froze in these beautiful diamond-like shapes. And then they thought negative thoughts on water and they froze them and look at them and they're all bubbly and gnarly looking and they're yellowed by this thing. Well, when they played metal, they were trying different types of music. The metal ones look like the beautiful diamond formations, but they're all shook up. They've got staggers in them. They look like a Hall of Mirrors version of it. And I would say what that actually means is and this is why a lot of hard music is used by people in political movements, especially on the left, because it shakes up the status quo. It literally does that to your system. And then it's way more inviting on the other side than you think. So there you go. That's my little tangent. Anyway, okay, let's take calls. Because Tony and I could do a show about this. Sure. Let's go to Lori in New Mexico. Hi, Lori.
Good morning. I love all you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Lori.
Yeah, you guys, I live in a very red part of New Mexico. And it's all petroleum-based here. And it's all very religion-based here
hand
also.
In hand.
Yes, I
no,
get my
message
by going north to Durango, Colorado, where I can hear sanity and not Hannity. But but let me tell you, I was thinking about this whole thing with Israel, and I'm more in line with President Carter. And I think President Obama is also. But the whole thing is he's a very, very intelligent man. Mm-hmm. And most of the world recognizes that. Except for Republicans here. Yeah. But
and it's good not to associate all of Israel with the Likud.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's like we're not all George W. Bush either, you know?
Right.
Well, knock on wood for that one.
Yeah.
There's
the
anyway.
Bush Shalom movement over there. There's a lot of peaceful efforts over there.
Mm-hmm.
Tikkun magazine.
Right.
What I'm looking at is that why doesn't President Obama just stand up and say, you know, I understand everyone's superstitions. Everyone has superstitions. But we have to base our policy on fact and no longer base it on superstitions.
I think using the word superstition would cut you right there at the hamstring in that race.
Yeah.
But I understand what you.
It's another great test for us to realize we can't have the version we want, knowing that in their office an advisor is going to look at him and go, "There's no way you can do that."
Yeah,
and set up the next
and
Democrat
that person,
for
by the way,
being voted
the,
in.
Maybe
right.
not use the verbiage superstitions, but you know, use a reasonable facsimile so we could cut through. All of that, and let's get
well, we're
to
gonna, we're gonna, Obama gave a speech at the convention center in Israel in Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Convention Center. He opened for Nickelback, I think.
Right before the car show.
Yeah, right before the car show, where Erin Gray will be signing autographs in her Wilma Deering outfit from Buck Rogers, and I'm so mad I'm not there. By the way, that's where I met Erin Gray. No, she was not wearing her outfit, but I was like waiting for her to catch me. So let's take one more call, and then because we're near the end of the program, but I want to get to Carol in California. Hi, Carol.
All right, hallelujah. Yeah. I didn't think I was going to get on. Number one, I've been wanting to call in, but I can't get through. T-boner won't let me on a lot of times. But Hal, the voting machines, Democrats are never going to get anywhere unless they take over or have equal.
Very important issue. You're absolutely right. We'll talk about that a little bit.
And God is over Israel. The Jews are just defending themselves. There's a strain of people from way back who want to take them out, and they're just defending themselves. So, and the Bible.
I would not say it is cut and dry like that. And when you say something like God is over Israel, that presumes one thing that I have a big problem with, and that is that if you believe in God, he is not over, or she is not over, the rest of the globe, too.
Well,
and that presumption of singular protectivity is a very problematic point.
But there are people who want to take the Jews out.
That's true, but there are also Jews that want to take out the Palestinians entirely.
In the Bible is coming true. So,
no, not everything. No.
I have studied it, and it's not.
Right. And it is not coming true any more than Nostradamus is coming true or the predictions of Edgar Casey.
Yeah, it is, because everybody's coming up against Israel. And they're just defending themselves.
Yeah, I appreciate the point of view, Carol, but I also think that it's a hypered oversimplification. And again,
I mean, aren't there groups that want to take out other groups?
There always have been.
It happens
you know
here
what?
In the U.S.
Most people, God is a slave.
Mm-hmm.
And God says this because I think this. God does that, but you won't listen to me if it's just me saying it.
Right.
Or you won't listen to the guy in the building. It's got to be, there's something so gargantuan behind me that when you say it, you have this monster giant on your side to defend what you said.
Absolutely. He's the big brother that nobody
God's going to give me this. God, give me that. Give me. Everything's what God gives you. You've made him your slave.
Right.
Or her.
It's such a great conversation. Rick Overton, thank you so much. Jackie Schechner, amazing as always. Wow. Tony and Rebecca holding down the fort. I'm Hal Sparks. We'll be here tomorrow when we're talking. We'll have clips of the speech. We'll be talking about voting machines, and we'll talk about what the Republicans are doing while Obama is gone. We'll see you tomorrow.
My age, it means less.